At least not yet.
The pressure of the gun barrel was removed. Ryan turned slightly. The tallest woman he had ever seen walked slowly around him, giving him the briefest of appraising glances. A black 380 Beretta 85F dangled from her right hand. She looked to be only half an inch shy of Ryan, 6 feet 2 inches. Her face might have been beautiful, if not for the grave, joyless expression she wore, the X scar on her forehead, and the gold-embroidered black patch covering her left eye. There was an air of dangerous assurance about her, of knowing precisely what her abilities were and how superior they were to others. However, that quality, coupled with her manner of dress, brown leather jacket, skin-tight jeans, and knee-high black boots, didn't detract from the femininity exuding from the smoothly chiseled features, one cobalt blue eye, and the luxuriant, waist-length fall of dark mahogany hair. A 14-inch bowie knife was scabbarded crosswise across her belly. The woman squirmed into a comfortable position on Hellstrom's lap, and he absently fondled her upper thigh.
"This is Fleur, my warlord. Looks like you and she have something in common, Cawdor. At least in the old glassy department. You both fall a little short of a 2020 vid."
"I've never found it a problem."
"You're a very adaptable fellow. Blasters down, men. It's secure for the moment."
Ryan removed his hand from the Sig Sauer, but went back to it as several Sec-men dragged Zadfrak's limp form into the saloon. The backswing of the batwing doors dealt him a nasty crack on the head. Mildred stepped forward.
"Those sons of..."
Christy put a hand on Mildred's arm.
"No, Mildred. Great danger here."
Mildred subsided, but she favored the Sec-men with a ferocious glare. Zadfrak was dropped roughly to the wooden floor, 6 feet in front of Hellstrom. Fleur arose from Hellstrom's lap and leaned against the back of his chair. Crooking a long finger, Hellstrom gazed down at Zadfrak.
"Come here, Zadfrak."
The man tried to rise, but the meager reserves of strength contained in his diseased body were exhausted.
"On your belly, then. By returning here after you were cast out, your status is less than an animal's."
Sickened, more than a little angered, Ryan watched as Zadfrak slowly and laboriously crawled toward Hellstrom's feet.
"Why are you treating him like that? He's sick!"
"Mind your tongue. You have no idea of our family's traditions."
"Agreed. But the question still stands. Why are you humiliating this man?"
"You're a very curious cat. But guess what can chill you?"
"Another cliché?"
Fleur rushed from the back of the chair, cheeks reddening, hand raising the Beretta. Ryan drew the Sig Sauer in one smooth motion. He had the bore on a direct line with her eye patch, just as she centered the Beretta on his.
"Freeze on that, Fleur! You too, Cawdor!"
The woman froze, but she didn't lower her weapon. She reminded Ryan of a ravening beast of prey, preparing to spring. Hellstrom reached up and drew Fleur back by the wrist. She returned to her position behind the chair, though she didn't take her eye off Ryan.
"You must forgive my warlord. Fleur prefers a more active, physical type of debate rather than verbal one-upsmanship. She can be rather difficult when she's feeling testy."
Zadfrak managed to raise one violently trembling hand beseechingly to Hellstrom. Taking a white linen glove from the pocket of his blazer, Hellstrom slipped it on his right hand and leaned forward. Grasping a handful of Zadfrak's sweat-drenched hair, he pulled the man's head up level with his knees and leaned forward. Zadfrak whispered something into the man's ear. Ryan didn't hear a word, but interest suddenly flickered in Hellstrom's dark eyes. Hellstrom gently lowered the man's head, allowing him to pillow it on his white-shod feet.
"Zadfrak has been welcomed back into the family. His past sins expunged, his status restored. He deserves a family funeral and memorial service with all the attendant honors. You two, as soon as we are done here, take him to his old quarters. Make his last hours as comfortable and pain-free as possible. You will oversee the preparations of the pyre, Fleur. Ryan, of course, you and your people are invited to remain here. It was Zadfrak's last request that you be treated as honored guests of his family. Please, avail yourself of Hellskell's hospitality. There are spare rooms on the floor above, and you're welcome to them gratis. Your Jack is no good here."
The skin between Ryan's shoulder blades crawled. He still sensed the half-dozen gun muzzles behind him.
Thanks. We'll be pleased to visit for a while.
After getting settled, the six friends met on the street outside the saloon, then took a tour of the ville, letting the settlement flow around them. The mingled odors, the colors, and the people were interesting, but also unsettling. All of the companions had been in odd places during their treks across Deathlands, but never had they visited a ville that throbbed with such a pulse of incredibly strong but joyful evil. It seemed that the permanent residents of Hellscale lived in an insular world, a universe completely separated from the rest of the ravaged continent. Their world was Hellscale. Changes, rebuilding processes, old and new baronies were of absolutely no interest, and in effect, didn't exist for them. This was their microcosmic kingdom, and anyone desiring to live among them had to think like them, believe like them, and be like them.
So, Millie, what's all this crap I keep hearing these people spout about Charlie?
Charles Manson was one of the most famous criminals of pre-dark history. I was just a little kid when he was arrested, but I remember the publicity storm. He and his family were so famous, they became part of popular culture.
The media, like television, radio, movies, magazines.
Anyway, Manson was terrifying in a lot of ways. He relished publicity, and even while he was in prison, his cult followers who had murdered people at his command were still his subjects. Most of his followers, his family, were women, and they shaved their heads as part of some ritual on his behalf. When he carved an X into his forehead, they did too.
How many people did his family kill?
God knows. There were a lot of unsolved murders they were suspected of, but Manson mainly targeted people he considered pigs.
Pigs?
Pigs. That was his word for the upper class, the wealthy, the famous, the people who had the power in pre-dark days. I believe the term creepy crawly, which is used so much in Deathlands, was derived from a family practice. Manson just came along at the right time, or the wrong time, depending on your point of view. The period of history he walked through was a time of cultural experimentation, free love, spiritual liberation, drug use, and a half-baked religiosity were all tenets of the so-called hippie movement.
I remember reading about it. The movement seemed exceptionally natural and idyllic. And along came Charles Manson and his family, living what appeared to be the typical hippie life out on a ranch near Los Angeles. It was a communal lifestyle, and Manson espoused his own cockamamie religion. His followers called him either God, Jesus, or man's son. They believed he was the new Messiah, the modern reincarnation of Christ. He reached the point where he believed it himself.
Well, there was more to it than that, of course. Manson specialized in creating zombie-minded followers. His family had degrees of initiation, indoctrination techniques, using isolation, hypnosis, drugs, and discipleship to create a web to ensnare innocents.
As I recall, Manson believed that all people were part of one vast mystical whole, so there was really no such thing as death, and murder wasn't really a sin.
Hell, I've run across crazier beliefs than that.
Maybe. But one of Manson's articles of faith was that a popular British musical group were prophets. And if you listen very carefully to their songs, particularly one called Helter Skelter, you could hear exactly what was going to happen in the not-too-distant future.
Which was?
An apocalypse that would start when all black people rose up and killed all white people, except for Manson and his followers, who would emerge at the end of the battle to rule the world. As the story goes, after a few years, once the victorious blacks found they were unable to govern, they turned the reins of power over to him. The world he used to describe as coming to pass is very much like this one.
Sounds like Helter Skelter had something for everybody. Racist fantasies, violence-prone crazies, plunderers, rapists.
Yes. Truly a dream world for ambulatory sociopaths. Every type of insanity could be indulged and encouraged in the land of Helter Skelter.
Helter Skelter? That was the name of Baron Zapp's tower stronghold in Greenglades, down in Florida.
And don't forget that cold heart killer Traven. Thinking about it, seems like he borrowed a lot from this Manson. Why didn't you mention this stuff then, Mildred?
Partly because the connection wasn't as obvious as this one. Besides, a Helter Skelter is a kind of slide in British amusement parks. And since we were in an amusement park, I didn't put the pieces together.